The Poorly Made Police podcast is for entertainment purposes only. This podcast has explicit content and is meant for a mature audience. The views expressed on this poorly made podcast reflect the opinions of the guest and host. They do not reflect the opinion of any department or entity. Nothing on this poorly made podcast should be construed as legal or marital advice. If something offends you, I kindly invite you to lighten the fuck up. If you want to support this very poorly made podcast, click the link at the end of the description and become a monthly sponsor of the podcast. Or buy yourself some nice poorly made police memes merch. Not only does it look good on you, it's also a favorite of wives, exes, children, nurses, nuns, IA investigators, defense attorneys, and the chief. And of course, take care of the fine sponsors of this podcast. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the orgasmic sound of a Crown Vic. Oh, hey there. Welcome to another fun, excited, action-packed edition of the Very Poorly Made Police Memes Podcast. I'm your host, Lenny. How are you guys? I'm excited to present this episode to you. My guest is a investigator with a state in the South on the state level, and he gives some great insight into being involved in an officer-involved shooting and some of these bigger investigations. So really great, down-to-earth dude. Good conversation. I think you guys will really enjoy the podcast. Before we get going, though, big, huge thanks to my buddies over at Bigfoot Holsters, one of the most popular people that advertise on Poorly Made Police Memes. Bigfoot Holsters makes Kydex holsters and other law enforcement equipment focusing on quality and durability. The Bigfoot Holsters Taser Attachment Kit will save you rows of Molly on your vest carrier while giving you a much more secure attachment than other options. I'm actually a customer. I got a holster for my Glock 43X. It's amazing. Super high quality. Great stuff. I can't say enough about it. So check them out at BigfootHolstersLLC.com. Well, we'll get going to it very shortly. I just, again, wanted to give a shout out to everybody that's supported this podcast, the monthly donors. I had a couple new ones roll through the last couple days. Thanks a lot, guys. You guys are awesome. And again, thanks for everything. The patches, the coins. I don't deserve you guys. But with that said, let's get into a little bit of music and then we'll get into the podcast. We haven't played any Of Gods and Machines in a while. So here's the boys with Of Gods and Machines, and we'll be right back with the podcast. All right, now the moment you've all been waiting for. I have the legend himself from the deep, deep South. I have Nick on the podcast. How are you, buddy?
I am great, sir. I'm so happy to be speaking to you.
I know. You actually made it awkward before we started recording, but that's okay. It's not that big of a deal, man. I'm just a regular dude. You know, regular dude in his fucking mid-30s, having a midlife crisis, recording a podcast in a basement like anybody else, all right?
It's like meeting your sergeant for the first time. It's always like, wow. But then eventually you learn he's just a regular guy that likes chicken wings.
Yeah. You know what? This is kind of a weird thing to think of, but I remember before I was a cop and I would meet a cop, I was always like in awe. I don't know if you experienced the same thing, but like there were several guys on a department that I really thought highly of that department. And I fucking thought those guys were the awesomest dudes ever. And now when I became a cop, I kind of wondered, you know, I was looking at them with the rose colored glasses. I'm like, I wonder how they actually were on the street. You know, were they a slug? Were they actually a good cop? I don't know if you experienced that before you were in law enforcement or not.
I did. We had a pretty active DARE program where I grew up. And the officer who was in charge of that was just an idol to everybody. And then actually after becoming a cop, I'm like, wow, he actually probably did not do a single thing.
Fucking SROs, right?
Am I exactly
right? Yeah. Well, enough bitching about you SROs. I gotta have some SROs on at some point. But Nick here is from the deep, deep South, and because of his position in law enforcement right now, we're gonna withhold the state just to leave a little mystery so he doesn't get doxxed or anything like that. But if I have it right, you are a criminal investigator for the state, right?
Yes, I've been doing that for about a couple years now. Before that, I did the road for about 10 years with a city police department.
How big of a city you work for? Big city, small city?
It was pretty small. I mean, it was big to me, but we only had,
That's what she said.
not my wife.
Sorry.
No, it was pretty small. It was we're pretty close to the pretty large metro area, but so that got us a lot of crime. But as far as our city itself, we only had about six officers on duty.
I mean, six on at one time is probably not. I mean, it's a lot depending on where you're at in the country. I know a lot of agencies run with one or two people. So six is, that's a handful. Literally, that was a dumb joke.
Yeah.
Before we get into, your whole career and all that, we got to get to know Nick a little bit. What was your inspiration and drive to get into law enforcement?
So my earliest memory was actually my biological father being arrested, and I remember an officer coming up to me and saying, "Hey, buddy, this is why he's not a bad person. He just did a bad thing, and this is why he's going to jail." And then my stepfather, who I met years and years later, was actually a cop, and he inspired me to, go into law enforcement. And I actually still remember what that first officer told me, and I would still say it to people when I arrest them: "Is you're not a bad person. You just did something bad. There's very few bad people out there." And it's kind of a weird situation to be, the son of a felon becoming a cop. But I felt that it made me a better cop because I understood kind of the criminal element a little bit, and understood that, just because they do something wrong doesn't mean they're a bad person.
I don't want to sound like Dr. Phil, but how's your relationship with your dad now?
Well, he's dead, so not that great. He actually died the weekend after I started policing. Just natural causes, but he was we didn't really have a good relationship after that, but he turned out okay, I guess.
I don't know where to go from there. I didn't expect that.
Hashtag heavy.
Hashtag, what do you say?
Hashtag heavy.
Yeah, that was a little heavy. I could make a
Yes.
mom joke there, but that's also inappropriate. So we're gonna move on. So you got into law enforcement, you only worked one agency?
No, I actually worked for a couple of them. I was a little bit of a gypsy. I started in a very small town. Then my wife, was girlfriend at the time, now my wife, didn't like where I was working, and I didn't want to move to where she was. So we kind of met in the middle, and that's where I ended up and worked there until I went to the state. And it was a great opportunity. I'm very, very grateful for it.
A lot of I honestly I don't know a whole lot about like DA investigators, and I don't know about state investigators. So that's all very interesting to me. But I want to talk a little bit about your police career before we get into that. What was the big things that you like to do on the road? I mean, what kind of cop were you?
I was actually a traffic cop, which is weird for
Nerd.
yeah, I know. And also, especially for somebody who went to investigations, but I really liked the DUI aspect of it, and that was because my first sergeant, who I kind of idolized when I first started, he was into traffic and into DUI, so that kind of led me into that. And I was on a DUI task force for a while. My record was 163 in 1 year, and I had a
That's pretty
great part.
impressive.
It was fun until I got a family, and then the 3 p.m. to 3 a.m. was a little rough. And then I ended up at my last department, and then one of my I ended up getting promoted to sergeant position, and one of my best friends told me about the state position, which is where one of their family members was. And I started looking into it, and fortunately enough, got hired on. And I've been loving it ever since, but I definitely appreciate my patrol experience and would not change it for the world.
I think the third officer on the podcast, maybe I'm forgetting somebody that was involved in an OIS. Do you mind telling us a little bit about that and what you experienced?
Yeah, so thankfully mine was not as rough as some people's. I remember the day pretty easily because it wasn't too long after I got promoted to sergeant. My shift and I, it was a Sunday night. I was really big on a family atmosphere. So Sunday night, we'd go out to dinner if we could. Everybody ate together and we had just finished eating and my guys went to their zones and I was just kind of patrolling around. I was doing some area checks at some businesses that had been burglarized recently. And I saw a car just blow through a red light at a pretty big intersection and didn't have any headlights on, ran the red light, also didn't have a tag. So I flipped a UE and as soon as I activated my lights, they turned into a parking lot. So I pulled in after them, tried to call it out on the radio, but one of my buddies, one of my zone or former zone partner, now subordinates, he called out a traffic stop. So as soon as he got off the air, I was able to call out, "Hey, I got one running," because the passenger had actually bailed out with a backpack and took off running. Jump out of my car and hold the driver, trying to get up to him and take him or detain him to try to figure out, wait, hey, why is the passenger running? But before I could get up to him, he does a U-turn, accelerates, and starts chasing me down. So I'm literally running through the parking lot trying to get away from the vehicle as he's steering after me. And I put it on the radio, radio number. I got one trying to run me over. And I remember drawing my gun, aiming at him. And then the next thing I remember is thinking, huh, my front sight is too far to the left. Like I wasn't lined up. So I corrected. I remember the flash of my first shot. And then don't remember anything until after I was actually behind cover. And I know I was cognizant for it because I had made it to cover, fired a second shot, and actually started running after the vehicle after it had gone into a ditch. The driver was able to recover, take off down the highway, and I wasn't able to find him. But we called out K-9. Our county police department was awesome. They immediately responded. They put out a officer needs help call. All the other cities responded. And I remember the sergeant from the county came up, put his hand on my shoulder, said, "You okay, bud?" I said, "Yeah, I think so." He's like, "All right, let's go get the son of a bitch." And he was a canine handler, so he pulled out his dog. And within 5 minutes, we had found where the passenger had dropped his backpack. And in the backpack was the registration for the truck. So I called the lady who was the registered owner. I said, "Hey, this is Sergeant Nick of the police department trying to find out where your vehicle is." And the next thing I hear is her hitting her husband and said, "Wake up, such and such did something, and the police are looking for him." And she told us her son's name, his phone number, where he lived, everything. And turns out one of our investigators had actually gone to high school with him and knew who he was. So we found the vehicle the next day. He turned himself into the police department and he got sentenced to, I think, 20 years for ag assault on an officer. He just had some minor injuries from the glass hitting him because he managed to duck down. But my current agency did the processing of the vehicle, and with the ballistic rods, actually, rotted the bullets, and it would have hit him in the head if he hadn't ducked. But say all that to say, the next day, my now current agency came in to investigate my shooting. And I was so impressed by them that whenever my friend told me that, hey, they're hiring, you might want to look into them, is whenever I was like, okay, let me actually look into them and see what else they do.
Well, let's talk about the shooting a little bit because I'm curious. Why did they, what was the whole deal? What was in the backpack? Why were they running?
There was a stolen gun. Meth, ecstasy, weed, crack, and I want to say some fentanyl. I can't remember which all tested positive for, because that whole night was kind of a blur. One thing I'm not really too happy about is my supervisor at the time said, "Hey, you're the supervisor, you work it." And because he didn't want to come in that night. And
Are
so I
you
ended up
fucking
working.
kidding me? It was your own shooting and you had to work it?
Yeah, I actually put down,
Dude.
I worked my own shooting, processed my own scene and everything.
That is, anybody listening, that is the stupidest fucking shit ever.
I got very lucky in the fact that he being the suspect, didn't actually fight it too much, because otherwise it would have been screwed.
Yeah, that there's some big fucking issues with that. It's honestly, I'm kind of shocked he got 20 years for that, because a lot of places they would have said, hey, no, he was just trying to speed off to go to church, and
Well,
that awful, and that you didn't go to jail for preventing him from going to church.
I think the one thing that kind of saved me in that was the fact that the parking lot had two exits, and he actually had to U-turn to come at me. And thankfully, it was also recorded on body cam.
Do you now, how long ago was that? Like, I mean, ballpark.
Probably about 5 to 7 years ago.
Okay. Do you think there would have been more scrutiny, or I guess let's just play a what if game. Do you think if you would have shot and killed him, that there would have been an issue with it with today's environment, or do you think today it would have been fine too?
I think today there probably would have been at least more scrutiny. The thing that kind of got me to fly under the radar was we had three additional fatal shootings that were also involved that same weekend. And the news cycle around here kind of hits, like it ends Friday and then it picks up again Monday. So mine was not mentioned even in the local paper.
Well, okay, hold on a second though. You said that it was at your agency had three fatal shootings, or just in that area?
No, just in our metropolitan area.
Oh, I was gonna say, holy shit, man, you got six guys on the road and three of them got into a shooting. That's a bad time.
No, I was actually the only, I was the second shooting in maybe 15 or 20 years. But thankfully, one of our civilian employees, her husband worked for the large metropolitan agency, and he'd been in multiple shootings, and he's outstanding guy. He actually came in the next morning and said, "Hey, man, you need to talk. I'm here." And that was great. And that's, if there's two things I could say for an officer, either before or immediately after a shooting, is one, make sure you have a legal protection plan. And two, talk to somebody.
Now, to elaborate, that's talk to somebody like a friend or pastor, or clergy, somebody like that. Maybe not necessarily, IA right away.
Correct. Yeah. And thankfully our IA person was he was actually retired from another agency and had been on the other side of the table. And he was like, "Hey, I don't even want to know what happened until you had a couple days off." And I will forever be grateful to him for that. But no, I mean, if talk to a chaplain, a friend, somebody that can help you work through it. And that's one thing. I'll go into shootings now that we're investigating, and I'll tell people, "Hey, man, if you don't need to talk, don't talk. And make sure that you're okay before we worry about anything else."
Now let's talk about you a little bit. You're talking about other people, talking to folks and get kind of getting out and talking through things. How was it for you as far as, now you're 5 to 7 years out? I mean, did you think you processed it okay? Do you still deal with it at all, or are you good?
I'm good now. At the time I came home, I was on night shift, and so I came home to an empty house. And as I started going to sleep, is whenever I started kind of feeling the recoil, if that makes sense, like in my arm and stuff. And it was a couple months later, after I had another kind of serious incident, that my department sent me to a post-incident seminar. And that's actually what helped me. And I didn't realize at the time, but I was actually carrying some of that still with me. And it wasn't until that I spoke to some other people that I realized, wait, I need to get this out. And once I did that, I was like, wow, I didn't realize how dark I was inside. And once I got it out, I was like, wow, I can actually live my life now.
There it is, kids. You just got to talk about it sometimes.
And it's weird because you're like, you know, you're wanting to be the macho, you know, I'm the street cop. I'm the Billy badass. I don't need anybody else. But I was sitting in that conference with some true heroes, and I was just humbled. And there were some other people that were, you know, way more, I guess, way more secure in themselves than I was. And I was with some other people that were just crumbling in front of each other. And, you know, we spent 8 hours the first day just talking. And afterwards, I was like, wow, there's some issues here that I need to talk about. And once I got those out, like, I felt like I could actually be a good father and a good cop and a good supervisor. And I know that's like the huggy feely weird stuff that we never want to talk about. But to the day I die, I will always recommend that to somebody.
Where's my clapping track right there? Hold on. We got to get that one in there. Well, now I said it, I have to do it. I really need an assistant. Now,
thank you. I'll be here all week.
So you get through all that and you go on with your career. Were you just kind of done at your department? You were kind of needing a change, or was this just kind of a cool opportunity you saw?
It was a little bit of both. So I realized I was plateaued at my department. There was a lot of lower level promotions, but even to this day, you know, a couple years later, there has not been a promotion to where I would have had the opportunity to promote from where I was. And I really just wanted to not work night shift and to have the opportunity to move around the state and stuff. And I remember whenever I got the call to be hired, I was like, well, can I talk to my wife about it first? And they were like, nobody tells us to hang on. Everybody just says yes. And I was like, oh, well, sorry. And I called him back a few hours later. I was like, all right, I'll take it. And I say, okay, I guess. And but thankfully, it turned out to be a great opportunity. And I'm to this day glad I took it.
So out of my own curiosity, I'm just going to assume that going to a state agency, it's not, you know, they're not just looking with somebody for that has a high school degree and a you know, they're certified through the state to be a cop. You probably need some college or no?
Yeah, so we have to have a bachelor's degree. A lot of people have masters, but you don't get anything extra for having one as far as like pay or anything. And you actually do not have to already be a certified police officer or have any road experience to come to us. At my office, we're the largest of our agency in our, because we have a bunch of offices throughout the state, and only about half of us have road experience. If you have road experience, it's great. You already speak the lingo, you know, you kind of understand where the officers are coming from, but you also have a little bit of bad habits. And so regardless of who you are, whenever you get hired, if you're not certified, you go through the state academy, which is about 3 months, which is kind of the same for throughout the region, so not just state specific. And then you go to the actual agent school, which is where everybody goes. And that's actually longer than the mandate academy is. So when you're done, you may have half a year of training and then you still have another year of field training.
I got to be honest, I'm a little surprised that they take people that don't have law enforcement experience. I mean, are you seeing pretty young, like out of college people come in to be state investigators or no?
Yeah, I would say it's about 50-50. And that's actually one thing I would say is kind of a downfall is I would rather have somebody who had, you know, a couple years experience as a street cop or as an investigator without a degree versus somebody who can go in and write a paper. Cause I can, when I was an FTO and a sergeant, I could teach somebody to write. That's not the issue. It's having somebody that can talk to somebody. And that was kind of my downfall from not being an investigator before, was I had to learn to talk to somebody other than just, you know, 5 minutes on the, on the side of the road or 5 minutes at the big box store whenever they're a shoplifter, I'd actually investigate. And that's why I actually think I wasn't the best choice. I just got lucky. And I thankfully had some great training. And my supervisor at the time was an amazing guy who, took the time to mentor me and teach me to be good and not just okay.
Well, it is nice to know somewhere in law enforcement there's good supervisors out there. Just out of curiosity, what was your major in college?
So I started as criminal justice, and then I changed to interdisciplinary studies, which is basically general studies, because I could not pass our foreign language requirement. And then finally passed, got my bachelor's, and then I got a master's in public administration, which is basically as worthless as criminal justice.
Nice. Were you doing that all as you were a cop, or you got that all done before you got on the road?
So I started my degree before even having an interest in really in law enforcement, and this kind of goes to the old question of do you have a shit your pants story? And the reason I stopped or dropped out of college was I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which is basically shit your pants all the time. And finally got that under control and became a cop, did that for a couple of years. And then it wasn't until right before I became a state agent that I was able to finish my degree and then immediately went on to my master's and actually did probably the majority of both of those at an extra job.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that on those extra jobs they're doing some college work. Going to the shit the pants thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later because we're mature people here, but I wonder if my audience just everybody has Crohn's disease and that's why everybody shits their pants. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
And ironically, if I can go ahead and segue to that, I never had I guess the opportunity to do that on duty. I came very close at times, but having worked for small towns where dispatch or the jail or the PD is pretty close, I was able to avoid that. But I still to this day keep an entire change of uniform in my vehicle.
Wait, do you guys have uniforms?
Ish. We have a it's basically like a tack uniform or like a class B. So it we wear that the majority of the time, or we can wear a civilian attire. It's basically whatever's appropriate. Some days tomorrow I'll be in camouflage because I'll be in the woods trying to find some people. And today I was in a polo and khakis, and Thursday or later on the week I'll be wearing a suit and tie.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back to the podcast. I want to talk to you about my good buddies over at V Development Group. Not only do they have the great medical gear that I've talked to you about, they've got holsters, they've got belts, including the Belt of Thor. You heard that right, Megan Yord, a belt designed for concealed carry. In addition to all this awesome gear, they've got awesome t-shirts and coffee. You heard it here first, folks, coffee that every cop truly needs. That's my friends over at V Development Group, the educated end user's choice. You can find them at vdevgru.com. That's VDEVGRU.com. And I'll have a link in the podcast description. Now, back to the podcast. All right. It is all very interesting to me, the state agency thing. And I'm sure it's a little different state to state, but where you work, tell me if I'm wrong, do you guys basically help out the smaller jurisdictions that maybe don't have detectives and that type of stuff, or what type of role does your agency have?
Yeah, so we are actually, we cannot start an investigation unless it's over a couple different specific types of crimes. We have to be requested in, and it's only by certain people that by law can request us. So in smaller or more rural parts, we are the investigators for entire counties. We'll work everything from a felony burglary to homicides. Where I am, we basically only work homicides, child molestations, even then only certain ones, and basically all officer-involved shootings. So I have a couple homicides, and I also work a lot of white-collar stuff if it involves, like, politicians.
All right. So, yeah, in my limited law enforcement experience in the – I almost said it, the city I worked, we didn't really deal – at least I didn't, maybe the Dicks did, deal with CBI or anything like that. So I don't know really anything about what they do. My dad works at a, you know, an agency that may use them occasionally. And then when I moved out here, I know Iowa has a different name for it, but I was talking to some of the local guys out here and I said, hey, you know, you guys are small departments. What do you guys do if you have a homicide? And they're like, oh, we just fucking call the state and they come deal with it. And I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah, so where I started was like that. If, you know, the one every 3 or 4 years that homicide we'd have, we'd call the state. And throughout our entire Southeast region, you know, pretty much everybody has a different highway patrol versus investigative law enforcement agency. And that's the way we are. So, like my agency, we don't write tickets. We don't have marked cars. We have a uniform branch that kind of does that. And then, like I said, in our more rural parts, we will, you know, we'll be asked to step in for basically everything. And then where I am, the day-to-day patrol officer has no idea what we do. They just know we come in whenever, and that's the way I was, you know, we just get brought in whenever there's an officer-involved shooting. They look at us as like super IA and they don't like us. They don't trust us. And I understand where they're coming from, because if they don't know us, they don't really have a basis to trust us. And that's why I think that having, you know, people with more patrol experience that can relate to the patrol officer is a little bit better.
I remember going on a call to basically, I don't remember what they were doing. I think it was the marshals or somebody. And my understanding is not all the marshals have been in law enforcement as far as like a street cop. I could be wrong, but they would call us in occasionally like, hey, we just want a couple of uniform guys on scene in case things go south. We're going to do this. And we usually, if we could, we'd go help them out. Right. Mm-hmm. And I usually it was just outside bullshitting with my buddy outside of with the car. But I, you know, they all kind of grouped around and I'm kind of looking at them all. And I'm like, they just don't seem like cops. You know, they got the TAC vest on. But I was, this is kind of a weird memory to bring up with you, but I just remember looking at them and like the way people had done makeup and stuff. I'm like, and you know, they got their TAC vest on. I'm like, this isn't like cops and robbers. Like, this is real shit. Like, I don't know. I found it was kind of interesting. And like, yeah, I remember looking at somebody's shoes and I'm like, these are dress shoes. These aren't like boots or something you'd want to move around tactically in, you know, but
I am so glad you just said that, because I mean, sorry, go ahead, but I will harp on
that. That was basically where I was going. It was just such a strange thing to, you know, you have this big opinion of, you know, the marshals and the FBI and, you know, all those people. But then when I met a gaggle of them, so to speak, I was kind of unimpressed.
Yeah. So, or actually earlier today, I was in a meeting with a bunch of different agencies, including a big federal 3-letter agency. And, there was two guys from that agency there. One of them, I looked at him. We just kind of did like, the nod. We're like, hey, that's somebody I can trust. I looked at the other guy and I was like, I could just kind of tell by the way he was standing. And I glanced down at his shoes and he was wearing like patent leather dress shoes. I was like, yeah, he's never worked the road. And I looked over at the other guy and he's wearing, you know, Loas. I'm like, okay, that kind of legitimized what I thought about him. And then as we started comparing, you know, CVs and stuff, we actually knew some of the same people from our old agency. And the other guy had, you know, come straight out of college.
Fucking college boys. Yeah. I don't know, man. I guess in my opinion, I would like people in those big agencies to have a little bit of street experience at least, because I don't know. It seems relevant, but what do I know?
I agree. Just after seeing, After investigating a lot of the stuff that we investigate, which is mostly in my area shootings, the people who have been on the road for a little bit longer or just work the road at all, as opposed to somebody who's just works for a, like a task force or something, the way they carry themselves and their confidence and their level of force is different. When I started my agency, I was allowed to work an extra job with somebody else who had no street experience. And we started dealing with this guy who was, causing some issues at our location. And the other person was just like, they were scared to touch him. They were scared to do anything. They was like, hey, let's just call the city. And I was like, yeah, come on, we can handle the guy. And basically he and I got into a he tried to assault one of the security guards. So I went hands on with him. We got him I got him on the ground, got him in custody, and I watched the security tape later, and my partner was basically just standing back, kind of frozen. And I was just very grateful to have had my previous experience for, the confidence and also for the training that my agency gives us. They teach us very early on that a little bit of force now saves you a lot of force later. And that definitely applied to this situation. If we hadn't put him on the ground now, we would probably had to tase him, if not, hard empty hand him a little while later.
I gotta be honest, I'm very surprised that there's extra jobs for a state agency like yours.
I
Shocked.
was too, but we have a good reputation in the state. I don't know if it's because we're a smaller agency for the state, and so we don't get into as much stuff. But we have a good reputation with like command staff and citizens, as far as you see on the news that there was a shooting, and you always see this agency was brought in. And we're not scared to arrest cops if they're scumbags. So I've unfortunately had to do it before. But every time that I've had to arrest a cop, it was because they deserved it, and it was not somebody that needed to be out there in the public or protecting my family. And so that kind of helps the public trust. And so whenever they see us out there, they're like, okay, if that agency's involved, they're going to do it right. And that's nothing to do with me. That is everybody who's come before me that has been a legitimate person with integrity.
Well, let's talk a little bit about investigating cops. And I know you haven't been there forever, but I guess my question to you is, I feel like we hear a lot of the times in the news if a cop's been arrested or charged or whatever, but does it happen more than we actually know?
No, it's actually really rare, which is I'm grateful for. It's a very weird feeling, to have to turn to somebody else that you may know, and be like, look, man, you got to come with me and not as a friend. I actually had to arrest a buddy of mine before I even came to my agency, because I caught him on duty doing some stuff with somebody that he should not have been do doing. And the way that it came about through the victim's immediate statement to me was, he forced me to do this. And a lot of evidence immediately apparent led up to that. So I'm like, hey man, you got to get in my car, give me your stuff. And by the time the sergeant got there, he had actually admitted to everything, and he got put in prison for it. So it's a very weird situation. I had to arrest another officer a few months ago, not necessarily for what he did, but who he was doing it for. If that, I'm trying not to get too specific,
No, I
but
think everybody will kind of be able to figure that out.
yeah. And it was one of those that, if you're doing certain things, say with your computer, and then we find out about it, we're going to tell your agency. They're most likely going to handle it. But when you're doing it for people that are doing other nefarious activities and leading them to committing other crimes, that's something that we have to step in and handle.
I remember every year or every couple of years, we had to take like the NCIC test, you know, and, you know, make sure you weren't going to leave your computer open with people's information and, you know, fax, you know, arrest records across the country or whatever without permission. How often are guys fucking off on NCIC that causes problems?
Honestly, it's not very often. And we look at it as you know, pretty objectively. If you leave your computer up and somebody takes a picture through your window while you're on a traffic stop, which we've had before, we're not going to mess with you on that. You're probably going to have to do the training again or something, which is just a, you know, an hour or two class. But if you're sending information to other people, that's, and then, you know, we're finding out about it from other states, that's when we're going to step in and take some serious action.
I think we've all heard the story of people running plates or running people that they shouldn't be running, you know, because they want to learn about, you know, friends and family members and shit.
Yeah. And I mean, and that sort of stuff. I mean, again, we have to be requested to come in. We have to have a, you know, some sort of lead. We're not just going to go digging around and trying to, you know, screw people over and be like, hey, I want to see what this person was running because I don't like them. We don't do that. So in my case, my most recent one, it was in another state. They arrested a guy, found out that he had been getting information from the officer, sent it to us. We investigated, and he even admitted to it. And that's how he ended up in, you know, in the jail. But as far as people just screwing around and trying to find out, oh, that's a hot chick, let me find out what her name is and stuff, well, I've never run across that.
Don't do it, kids. Just saying.
Yeah, I mean,
don't do it.
Not saying do it, just saying we don't come across it.
I'm just saying don't fucking do that shit. It's fucking stupid. Let's talk a little bit about, so you say you deal with like a lot of white collar stuff, and I know you can't get into details, but can you kind of enlighten us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, so my position is, so our office has, well, actually all of our offices, we have like kind of subspecialties. Everybody works primary investigations, and then you're kind of a specialist in something else. It may be, you know, sexual assaults or something like that. And mine happens to be white collar and political stuff. So I have some investigations going on right now that some of them where agencies and cities are victims, and other ones where it's elected officials that are the suspects and the perpetrators. And we work with some prosecutors' offices and some other places to try to basically nip it in the bud. And so I had one case that was given to me where it was three separate individuals in the same county, not working together, just basically all accused of stuff. Two of them, they were basically just, it was political stuff where they were being targeted. I was able to clear both of them pretty quickly. But the third one was definitely some corruption. And it actually led us to four or five other people. And we're probably next month going to actually get any indictments against them. And that'll be some pretty cool stuff because, I mean, you work these cases for, you know, after coming from the road where you work a case for 15 minutes and you make an arrest or you cut somebody loose type thing, to go in and work in a case for a year and you're doing PowerPoints and spreadsheets and all this other stuff, reading through thousands of pages. And then you're like, yeah, I get to arrest these five people. And you're like, yeah, that doesn't sound that great. But then you're like, wait, these are five people that are actually taking money from our school system and from our senior citizens and from our public safety departments to line their own pockets. That's what makes it cool.
Yeah. And I think as a beat cop, you don't really experience like the true white collar stuff. And if you do come across it, it's one of those things you don't have the resources where you do send it up to somebody else and you really maybe get like 2 minutes into it, you know?
Oh, exactly. Before I came to my current position, I had no idea about a lot of the tools and the techniques that we have that are just cool. Cause it's like you're in a movie, and I do miss being a street cop. Don't get me wrong. But getting to actually take an investigation and work it for, you know, however many months and just saying, you have a supervisor say, whatever you need, we got you. That's pretty awesome as well.
I would assume you don't really have any regrets about taking that job.
When I first started, I hated it, to be honest, but that was because I had a horrible training officer who made my life miserable, like worse than anything I ever had in the academy or on the road. But I'm a big believer in, I made a commitment, I'm going to stick it through type thing. And so I'm like, I'm going to give it a couple months. And not long thereafter, they were told that they needed to pursue other opportunities outside of law enforcement. And I actually got a really great training officer and supervisor who said, okay, I understand this is what you've been through, but we're going to make it right. And ever since then, it's been great. And I'll still go back to my old agency and hang out with the guys and say hi and stuff like that. But I am very glad that I'm where I am now.
So the training at the state agency, like the FTO period, I know we talked about it a little bit before, but it's not like a typical FTO where you guys are going out in the car and, you know, hey, go stop that fucking car, find a reason to stop them. I mean, are they babying you through every single case, or are they just kind of stop by and see if you're okay, or how does that all work?
It really varies on the person. So we have an FTO manual, but it's not like that. You're not riding in the car next to somebody having to listen to their music and smell their farts and stuff. You're in your own car. You're going out.
If I like the farts.
That was actually when I went through FTO school, that was a supervisor that came in. It's like, look, I appreciate you guys going through this. You're going to smell other people's Chipotle. It's going to suck, but you know, stick with it. And so we would meet places, we would do investigations together. But it's a very different environment, which again is another reason that I think that you should have that riding in the car, being a patrol officer experience before coming to us, because you kind of don't realize how good you have it. But no, it can take you up to a year to finish our program. And it's not because you're not doing anything. It's just because it's so varied that you may not cover everything. You may not do some dope buys. You may not do surveillance these certain number of times, but you may have a ton of interviews and search warrants and stuff. But by the time you get done, you're pretty well-rounded, and they kind of start tapering you off to where, like right now, I'm a field training officer. So I have a trainee, has zero law enforcement experience, but has a really good head on her shoulders. And to the point where next month they will be able to start taking calls on their own. I'll just be kind of shadowing. My last trainee had law enforcement experience, but was an idiot. And at like a year, I was still going with them on everything.
So what you're saying is that my theory is not exactly right. Partly right.
Your theory is mostly correct. It's the same theory I have. So of course I'm going to defend it. It just, unfortunately, sometimes we hire somebody that looks good on paper and not somebody who actually is good.
Well, I think it's kind of the same thing in the academy. Is I think some guys do really, really good in the academy, and then when they come out on the road, they kind of freeze up, where you may have some losers in the academy that get out on the road and they kind of find their own. They do okay. So, I mean, you just kind of never know.
And I was one of the people that did great in the academy when I first went through, you know, years ago. And I'm lucky I did not get killed when I came out on the road. I was not prepared. I didn't have the life experience. I didn't have the practical knowledge. I was great at taking tests, but I was a horrible cop. And I'm just really glad that I had the mentorship to learn and get to the point where I was able to survive and more or less thrive.
You Southern boys are just a ball of positivity. I'm just saying, every time I've had one of you guys on, something I want to dive into a lot of it and kind of abuse you a little bit. I'm making this weirder than it needs to be, but obviously because of your experience in an OIS and then now your experience investigating those, When you first sent me a message, that was kind of something we talked about when you said you wanted to come on, is you kind of had this experience and kind of can walk through people kind of what to expect. And I know it's probably different state to state, but what to expect and some of the do's and don'ts and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you. One, I appreciate you having me on and even having the podcast and sharing the experiences that you have been able to. And that's not me sucking up. It's me like legit appreciating you and everybody else that's been on. In fact, I still have some questions about the North Carolina special police officer about some stuff, but that's about like their tickets and stuff. But anyway, no, if an officer has a not even an OIS, but just a use of force in general that results in an investigation is, don't be scared to say, I want legal representation. That does not mean you did anything wrong. It just means that you want a second opinion, basically. And whenever we sit down with officers, and this is something that when I had my good training officer that they taught me was, we'll sit down with people and say, hey, you don't have to talk to us. We're not under Garrity. If you talk to us, it's like us talking to a civilian. You can tell us to pound sand and we'll leave. And that does not mean anything bad against you. But the majority of the time, whenever we talk to somebody, we'll get an initial statement, just are you okay? Is there anybody out there we need to find? Stuff like that. And if they're like, hey, I want to give you a full statement, but we can tell that they're mentally not there, we will not interview them. And if you feel like you are mentally not there, don't talk to us. I mean, that is your right. And that's why, again, you have, a legal protection plan, because I had one whenever I had my shooting and they saved me. Even though I didn't do anything wrong, it never went to court. I was cleared pretty quickly by the DA. They still saved me thousands of dollars by, sending a lawyer out there to the scene and stuff. And I don't even know how many shootings I've worked at this point, but the vast majority have had an attorney, and it's usually one of two legal protection plans. And all the attorneys know how we work because our manual on how we work these investigations is online, and so they'll review it. And when I teach at the academy, I tell guys, hey, review our manual, because not only will that tell you what we're going to ask you, it'll also help what your IA and stuff may ask you. But getting back to your original question, kind of what's going to happen is after your incident, you're probably going to be brought back to your department. They'll let you know if an outside agency is coming in or not. We're going to get some initial information from you and basically make sure you're not injured. There's nobody else outstanding that we need to worry about. We're going to take your gun if you fired it. And that again is not mean that you did anything wrong, because that's like the death blow to a cop, is to have your gun taken away. When I had mine taken, I felt like scum, because even though I hadn't done anything wrong, that's the same piece of equipment I've had since day one. So we're going to take your gun, you're going to get a new one, and then within a couple of days, we'll arrange an interview with your attorney. We're going to ask you some questions about the incident and just be honest. That's what get people in trouble, is them trying to shift it to where it looks good. So if you don't know, tell me you don't know. If the answer is no, say no. If it's yes, say yes. And then my agency, we don't. If we're going to arrest you, we're going to do it pretty quick. But we can't really clear somebody. We're going to turn the case over to the DA's office. They're going to review it, probably send it to grand jury, and then they'll make the determination of whether or not it was a good shoot. And then, majority of the time, it's a good shoot. You're going to get your equipment or your gun back. And in my case, my gun actually got issued out with somebody else, and we had to have a heart to heart on my gun, give it back. So I've actually got it in my safe right now. But
Wait, hold on
Don't
a
be.
second. It got issued out like you guys, the agency buys people guns and they just kind of gave it to whoever? Or was there like a
Yes.
mistake in it? Like the evidence got turned to the wrong person?
No, so they took my gun the next day. They sent it to the crime lab. They did all their stuff with it. It got held in evidence until the case was cleared. And then, in the meantime, I'm working again because it's been, a year after it's been. And that's something else is different agencies have different time periods over how long they'll keep you off the road. I was off for 14 days. Other places they'll keep you off until the investigation is concluded, which may be a year or more. So I was back on the road. They gave me a new gun, and then my gun got issued out to a new guy whenever it came back. And the next week we bought new guns and a different caliber. I was like, hey, I want to buy my gun. That's what I have my shooting with. That's mine. That's what saved my life. And like, oh, we gave it to such and such. And I was like, hey man, I got to get that back.
That is a weird story, but I'm glad you told it.
I've got a lot of weird stories. I'm basically a weird person, but I will stay here as long as you want to hear as many weird things as you want.
What is the weirdest thing you're thinking of right this moment?
Pandas jumping off of a volcano.
You know, I was actually going for like a story, not something super weird like that. That was fucking weird.
Sorry.
That's
No,
cool.
I've got kids and they've got a bunch of stuffed pandas and stuff. And they're weird kids as well. No, I've got weird stories and I've got funny stories. The funniest one that I have to me is the guy who I pulled over for DUI, or I pulled over for reckless driving all over the road. And I said, hey man, where are you headed to? And he said, well, I'm going home to such and such. I'm like, well, that's the opposite direction. He said, yeah. I was trying to drive around until I sobered up. That way I wouldn't get in trouble for coming home drunk.
Good man. Well,
So I was like, I appreciate you, but you willing to take a few tests? And he was like a 0.2 something. I don't know how he was awake at that point.
that's pretty impressive. That is really impressive.
Yeah, I say he was a kid, but he was probably 40 something years old, and he was, yeah.
Hey man, when the old lady doesn't want you to come home drunk, you don't come home drunk, man.
Funny thing was, he lived with his parents.
Oh boy, that'll happen.
Yeah.
To get back to the shooting stuff a little bit, I wanted to talk a little bit about a little thing called Garrity, because I
Yes.
don't think it's come up on the podcast. I'm going to allow you to explain it because you're probably going to explain it a lot better than me.
Probably have a lot of people that know it a lot better than I do, but the way I know it, the way it was always taught to me, is Garrity. The bit of history lesson comes from Garrity versus New Jersey, which is case law, that basically says if the department forces you to talk, that cannot be used against you criminally. Because Garrity is basically 100% different than your Miranda rights. Because your rights under Miranda is you don't have to talk to me, you don't have to tell me anything. Garrity says you have to talk to me, otherwise consequences up to and including firing. So whenever we talk to somebody, Garrity does not apply. In fact, we read them an advisory that basically says you don't have to talk to us. Garrity is not in play. If you do not talk to us, there is no ramifications, no punishment whatsoever. So if you are brought in to a department or to your agency and read Garrity, whatever you tell them can be used against you civilly and, as far as like your hiring process or your employment process, but it cannot be used against you criminally. So if, say, I bring you in and I read you Miranda as the investigator and I say, hey, will you talk to me? And you say, nope. Okay, there no harm, no foul, can't do anything with you. That's your God-given right. Then your IA investigator comes in and says, hey, Garrity, you have to talk to me, and you say no, then they can fire you. Or if you say, okay, I don't want to lose my job, yeah, I murdered that person, then whatever you tell the investigator under Garrity, they cannot tell us. So I have an investigation right now where an officer has been terminated from their agency. Then they asked us to come in and investigate the officer. Well, that officer has already made apparently a whole bunch of statements under Garrity that led to their termination, but I cannot read a single word of that, because if I do, it's basically a coerced statement.
So anybody that's not in law enforcement, you don't know anything about Garrity. And if you're in law enforcement and you don't know what we're talking about, you should read up on Garrity so you understand it more.
Yes.
But so people, like a lay person, hears that and they're like, well, what the fuck? You could confess to a murder and they can't go after you. Take just to kind of step back and so you hear the whole part of it. This is usually, I mean, it should be after the criminal investigation. Cops involved in something have the same rights as everybody else. So if you choose not to talk to another cop who is investigating you, that's your, like my friend here said, my friend Nick here said, it's your name, right? Is that what we went
yes.
with?
Yes.
That's what Nick went with here. Like Nick said, that's your right not to speak. Now your department, because you work for them and they're your employer, they can force you to speak as a part of your job, part of your employment. But it's like you were saying, it's coerced. You can't use that in court because they're telling you you have to talk about this per your employment, which that has nothing to do with your, you know, your Miranda rights. So there you go.
The way I explain it to citizens is if I come in there, I'm like, hey, you're going to talk to me. Otherwise, I'm going to beat you with a sack full of oranges. Then that's coercive. If I come in there and say, hey, you're going to get fired from your job and your livelihood if you don't talk to me, that's coercive. And it's, you have, like you said, you have the same rights as a cop as you do as a civilian. I just have to make sure that threshold is met in a different way.
Yeah, so I think to a lot of people it probably sounds, and maybe it doesn't, but to me it makes a whole lot of sense, because it's like, well, yeah, it's, you know, you fucking lawyered up. You said you weren't going to talk and then the department's going to make you talk. So, you know, the department's the police and the government, blah, blah, blah. So that's why that is there. I think that's a fair protection, but I think some people might not like that, but I think it makes perfectly good sense to me. And it's probably the same people that would scream, don't talk to the cops. So I don't want to talk to the cops either, motherfucker. Just kidding.
Oh, I wouldn't either.
Dude, that could be an entire podcast. But yes. That's a story for another day. We started talking about dolphins and volcanoes or something, but was there anything, I don't want to miss anything. Is there any other wisdom that you want to pass on about being involved in a shooting?
Basically just don't be surprised if it comes back a couple days or a couple weeks later and kind of like, you know, comes out of nowhere to where all of a sudden you remember it. I was fine for like a couple months, and then I drove past the parking lot where it happened. I was like, oh crap, that's where the guy tried to kill me. So don't be scared to talk to somebody. Don't be scared if it comes back later.
Let me ask you that, kind of on the same wavelengths, and I'm curious what you know about it, what you learned in training and any personal experience, but I've always thought it was kind of strange. You know, if we talk to a suspect on scene or we're trying to Mirandize them, at least, you know, I don't know what the dicks do. They might do their own special thing, but usually you try and talk to them. That's it. You're not going to talk to them again. Where as a cop, and I get it's different circumstances, but if you're involved in the big incident, whether it's a shooting or something else, most departments will say, hey, take a night off. You know, you can talk to us in the morning or a couple of days later, like kind of get your head straight. Do you know if there's any, and maybe I'm asking the wrong guy, but do you know if there's any studies or anything about, you know, when you're going to remember that stuff better? Is it right after it happened? Is it a couple of days later? What kind of information's out there?
I recommend people go to Force Science Institute. They do a great.
Oh, you need the hand clap for that. I love Force Science, but go on.
Yeah. They do a great job of researching that. And we get some training from them and from some other, you know, use of force instructors and investigators and stuff. And that's one thing. Another great thing I have to say about my agency is we never stop learning and we never stop updating to the current times and the new science. But usually within 3 to 4 days is whenever you're going to kind of start to process things more. But whenever I go into an interview, I tell the officer, look, you're going to tell me something, and then halfway through your statement, you may remember something totally different. That's fine. That doesn't mean you're lying, that you're trying to confuse the issue. It just means that your body is remembering things differently. Like I said, when my shooting, I don't remember my second shot. I remember the muzzle blast of my first shot after correcting my sights. And then I don't remember anything for probably about 10 or 15 seconds. And that's normal. You know, I may interview somebody and they're like, yeah, I swear the suspect had a red hat. And then we watch the body cam later and they had a black hat. That's fine. Your body's going to, you're not going to remember certain things. The time dilation, the auditory exclusion, the visual exclusion, those are all real, but they affect somebody differently. So, you know, Lenny and I may be on the same scene. We both shoot at the guy for the same reason, but we're both going to see things totally differently. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that doesn't mean either one of us is lying. It just means we processed it differently.
And that's kind of the downfall of body cams that people don't understand. Is humans, their memory is fallible, but the camera is not.
It's funny because I think I was saying earlier, there's an investigation I'm doing where we have probably 24 people saying, I saw it. I saw the officers murder that person. But then I watched the dash camera and there's not a single witness out there. They all came after the fact. And we're basically just trying to basically fuck the police. We don't like you because it's that type of area. But that's also why we do a thorough, impartial investigation, because, you know, I don't work for XYZ Police Department. I work for the citizens of our state. And most cops, whenever we sit down and talk with them, and like, especially if you explain, look, this is why we're doing the investigation, they understand, because just because I work for the state and you work for the city doesn't mean we have any different goals. It's just, we have a different title. And there's no, I'm better than you, you're better than me. And unfortunately, some people do have that mentality, but there's zero reason for it. I'm a cop, you're a cop. Our goal is the same, which is the truth.
I wanted to step back just a second, because I wanted to talk about the memory thing a little bit, because that kind of jogged something. I was, it was my first year on graveyards, and you know how it is on graveyards. You're fucking tired all the time, and it can be terrible, but it's a lot of fun. But I was talking to this lady, and her son saw it across the street, and the son had some kind of learning disability. And this was the middle of the night, dark as shit. He runs across the street, which is actually a highway, four lane highway, and in town, and he gets hit by a car. Ooh. And I remember yelling at him, don't do it, you know, stop, because there's no way this car is going to see him, right? And I was looking right at when he got hit by the car. I don't remember any of it, none of it. I remember thinking as he got hit, I remember that. I remember him getting hit and starting to go airborne. And it's like my mind shut off, like, nah, you don't want to see this shit. Yep. I remember thinking there's a car behind him and he's going to get hit by the car that comes behind. But then I don't remember what happened. I remember that was one of those times as a rookie. I was like, I couldn't even like get out over the air. What I just saw, I was like, a dude got hit by a car. I don't even know where I am. You know, it was just crazy and pandemonium. And I think he ended up kind of being okay. But I mean, it was pretty brutal the way he got hit and, you know, started to fly. But I don't fucking remember any of it. So I don't know if anybody else out there has kind of experienced that same thing. But it just, sometimes your mind, I mean, you can't control it. You know, you don't fucking remember some of this stuff.
And what's funny is until you actually get asked about it, you don't realize you don't remember it. I don't know if it's like that in Colorado, where you have some streets that have a road name and like a highway name or something like that.
Yeah, that was the same scenario. Yeah.
So we have one of my buddies. He was a senior officer. He'd been there, you know, a couple years more than me. He was always cool and calm under pressure. He witnessed a kind of the same scenario where a guy ran across the road, got hit by a car, and he starts calling out, Highway 1 and Main Street, Highway 1 and Main Street. And the dispatcher's like, that's the same road I need to cross street. Because in his mind, it made perfect sense. But he didn't realize that he wasn't processing it properly.
Yeah, and I to this day, I want to know how he didn't get hit by the second car. Or fuck, maybe he did, I don't know. And that's the thing that sucked is I remember thinking that, like, because the car hit him and initially started driving. And when I kind of like realized what was going on, I saw him on the ground, I was like, fuck, I watched it. I don't even know what kind of fucking car hit him.
And that
Thankfully the guy stopped.
kind of brings up another point that I meant to mention earlier, is whenever we interview people, we ask that, if whenever we interview them, we ask that they not watch their body cam beforehand. And that's not because we want to catch them in like a trick bag or be like, oh, well, you said he was on the he pulled a gun with his right hand, it was a left hand. It's because we want to know what you as the officer objectively saw and what you felt at that time. Because I know me, I would see something happen and then I'd want to go back and watch it on body cam or dash cam, and it'd be totally different than I remembered. And so whenever I was trying to recall it later, I'd be so confused. And so that's why we want you to be like, okay, this is what I saw, this is what I smelled, this is what I felt. Because say that guy had been running across the road with a cell phone in his hand, but you saw a gun. Well, I want to know why you thought that. I don't want to know what you saw on the body cam later with night vision and perfect, clarity and not having your head turned and not having somebody yelling in your ear. I want to know what you saw at that time, because that's what we look at, is the objectively reasonable officer, not the, watch it at one frame per minute body cam.
Yeah, it's, I will say that kind of add on to that a little bit. I know I had a critical case and I've talked about it a lot. I'm not going to go into the details again, but when I avoided watching it or anything to do with it until I had to kind of thing. And, court, before court, they asked me, the DA asked me to review it and all that stuff. And he said something as we were arresting him. And as soon as I never thought of it after that thing. And it was like, as I replayed the thing, I never replayed that part in my head. And then when I started watching that, it just instantly hit like the whole feel of everything when I was there and him yelling this thing out. And I was like, holy fuck. I just, for whatever reason, that little blip just totally spaced my mind, until I was reminded of it. So the mind works in kind of interesting ways, which I think sometimes law enforcement, what can be kind of tricky is when you're talking to like a suspect, is it, are they remembering things weird? Are they being deceitful? So that's, I think for people kind of on the outside looking in, sometimes that shit can be kind of tough to figure out.
Yeah, and there's talking about, being on night shift. The thing that I always like to do is, again, nerd. I always like to listen to audiobooks. And the two best books that I can recommend to people, after, living my career and everything, and what I would do if I could go back to, 15 years or whatever to be as a rookie, is I would read or listen to, What Everybody Is Saying, which is a former FBI agent talking about body language, just because it's awesome. And then On Killing by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman,
But
because
I
it's
got on combat down here
awesome.
in
Yeah,
the
I mean,
dungeon,
he's
yeah.
because I mean, those it's not a direct, correlation, but it opens your mind up to so many things.
Did you hear the podcast? I don't know if it was a podcast. Maybe we were gonna do a pod. Yeah, we did. It was Ben, thanks for your service, buddy. We were kind of making fun of Grossman for the sheepdog thing.
I did, and that's it actually that was kind of a PTSD moment, because I had a horrible supervisor who was, there's the sheepdogs and there's the sheep, like, he sounded like Al Pacino, but of course this is
Did a
also
pretty
the
good
guy,
impression there. That was good.
well this is the same guy that would literally put 5 miles on his car, and that's because he would go to, Waffle House and back to the station. But
Hey, do y'all
he was
call it the
bit
unlawful house or the Waffle House?
we just called it the Awful House.
All right, I've heard that one too. All right. That one passes the sniff test.
So, but yeah, he was big on that. But I actually got that and emotional survival for law enforcement. I was given that after my shooting, and I wish I'd read that before, because that's something to not only for the officer but also for the family to kind of realize the signs of PTSD. Because I don't care if you call me a pussy or a wuss or anything like that, because as long as I can, live past retirement and, have a normal family, from recognizing the signs of issues, that's what I'm all about.
Where's my fucking applause button? That'll be the name of the podcast. Where's my fucking applause button? Yeah, dude, I go read a book, everybody. I mean, after you listen to the podcast, of course, but there's some good
And
shit out
subscribe.
there for sure. Yeah. Click like and subscribe. And then, God, I feel so corny. Like, you watch like the YouTubers and they do like the don't forget to comment, like, and subscribe. I mean, I understand it, it helps them out, but it just,
Hey
people
man,
won't do it if they're gonna do it, you know?
I've got a parking lot and chill sticker on the back of my laptop, and every time I go to an officer interview, they always like look at me kind of cockeyed and like, all right, I can get behind that.
There you go. I not to try and sell more merch. I actually posted a picture of it before we started recording, but I made these Crown Vic stuff. It says en route and the fucking Crown Vic's up in the air. Dude, I have the fucking Tumblr, I guess you would call it. It's so fucking good, man. It came out so good. I love it. So I actually got the t-shirt too. And I got my kid the t-shirt. So there'll be some pictures of my kid in the t-shirt so I can sell shit. So I don't know if that's cool or not, but I'm gonna do it.
Oh no, totally pimp your kids out. That's what they're there for.
Exactly, man. To be seen, not heard, and to sell merchandise. Well, shit,
Exactly.
man. This has been a good chat. I think there's been a lot of good information out there. You ready for some of my dumb and possibly wholesome questions?
That's my favorite part of the show.
Is it really? I wondered how popular they were, but now you just you warmed my black little heart with that. I appreciate you.
And I appreciate you bringing the music back, man, because I've not that listening to just Crown Vic and going into everything was bad. It's just I like hearing some different bands every once in a while.
Dude, I'm so lazy. It really doesn't take that long. I'm just lazy. That's really what
Hey,
it is.
man, I am such a fangirl for this podcast that it's I'm sorry, go
No, continue on. This was feeling good. Let me
ahead.
play the porn music while you talk about being a fangirl of the podcast.
Let me go ahead and rub your shoulders.
Yeah. Do you ever see the signs on the side of the road that say shoulder work and the rub your wife's shoulder? Or is that like a dumb joke that I know?
Usually when I see those, I'm kind of driving alone, and so I'll just reach over and kind of rub the headrest, and then have people looking at me weird. But anyway,
I wish you weren't so fucking awkward, bud.
yeah, supposedly, but I'm just gonna go have a puppers after this.
Yeah, I have a fucking puppers, man. Yeah, the music thing, I mean, part of it for a while is because I don't know. I'm not gonna bore you guys with the details of actually like the nitty-gritty of the getting the podcast out, but it's sort of tedious and I just want to get out of the basement sometimes and I'm like, ugh, I don't want to do the music. Fuck it. Or, a bunch of shit's going on, but I'm not doing my my people that are in bands a good deed. I gotta help them out, so I'll try to be better with that.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Sure, I'd love it.
What percentage of the bands that get sent in actually suck?
I think I played everybody that came on.
Oh, nice. Because I
Yeah,
mean,
I don't think I've turned anybody down. I mean, I not all of the music is my thing. But I'm here to get kind of give them a platform to do their thing. I mean, there's really some fucking great people. Brownlow's good. Weekend Picnic is good. Seth Mills is good. All like, what's the other one that I really like? Blacktop. I think I've said it fucked up a couple times on the podcast. I think it's Blacktop Rodeo, but I say radio, or maybe it's vice versa. It's confusing for me. I'm not smart. Oh, there's another country band that's really good. So, I like a lot of the stuff that's on there. I'm not leaving anybody out. Everybody's good in their own right. My thing is I'm just gonna play everybody, let everybody, make their decisions on what they like and don't like, and it's only 30 seconds. That's what she said. Although
Oh.
it's true. I got a message from somebody the other day. It was like, hey man, you need to cut the music and just get right into the podcast. So I was like, I've learned that a valuable lesson over the last year. it's really hard to make everybody happy. You know, some people don't like some stuff, and it's, I'm not gonna, that's the thing I've learned the most over the year is some people don't like this or that, but you know, a lot of people like the poop questions. Some people hate it. So it's like, well, I can't make everybody happy. So I gotta do my best with it. But I do appreciate feedback. When anybody has anything, I'd love to hear it. I mean, here, let's have a conversation nobody gives a shit about. Maybe I'll keep it in, maybe I won't. But so I do like the Instagram stories. I don't know if you're on Instagram, like usually a couple days after the podcast, like, hey, what'd you think, and thoughts and opinions and stuff. And this is going to sound stupid, but I'm looking for more of like, not a book club, but it's the best thing I can think of, just to get like, not just like, oh, cool, it was good or it was bad or whatever, but like what you actually thought about stuff, or if you noticed anything, or you know, you had something that we should think about, or maybe a guess that would be good based on some of that, or maybe was there not great info or whatever, but just really getting a dialogue going about the podcast, because I think it'd be interesting. But I don't know that the Instagram stories are the best forum to do that.
It's a little weird just on Instagram trying to, because one thing, everybody's public, and another thing, you can't really get like the involved in it, because Instagram is just like a, hey, let me hit it and quit it.
You know, that's right.
That's really, yeah. So, but no, I mean, this isn't the poorly made Nick podcast. This is the poorly made police podcast. This is, I mean, this is Lenny's show. It's not Nick's show. So, I mean, you come on here and, you know, play a banjo for an hour and a half, I probably wouldn't listen to it, but it's your show. You can do what you want. But I mean, again, that's just me. I just appreciate the fact that somebody's on here being honest and you know, having a thoughtful conversation and not being scared to disagree. And again, that's not me brown nosing or anything. It's just that's what I like.
I like that there's these podcasts actually aren't out yet by the time we're talking. I talked to an LA cop and his wife who works in the jails, as I think the previous one. And then the one is probably coming out, I don't know, in a day from now for you. I talked to a lieutenant that works in the South, or I'm sorry, a captain that works in the South. And there were disagreements in it. But what I liked, and that I hope people, I mean, this isn't, I don't know, I'm not some fucking genius, but what I like about that type of shit is that we can disagree on stuff, but we can move on from it, or we can kind of say, all right, this is what we think kind of thing. And it's cool. We can move on. It's cool to hear differing opinions. 'Cause I mean, I have this fucking persona where I act like I'm fucking smarter than everybody. I'm a fucking idiot. I give up a good job and I work a podcast in a basement. I'm a fucking dumbass. I didn't go to college. I'm an idiot. Okay. But it's nice to hear differing opinions. It's kind of cool. We don't hear that very often because usually most places we go is an echo chamber of all the same thoughts.
Yes, and my wife, I one of the reasons I'm with her is because she is one, she's way smarter than me, so why she ended up with me, I don't know, but also she and I have totally different opinions, and she is perfectly okay with disagreeing with me, and that's what I need sometimes is someone to say, no, you're an idiot, don't do that.
I don't think you're an idiot, though.
Well, I love you too.
Hey, that's a little too far for the first date. You're gonna scare me off.
I'm sorry, I loathe you too.
Thank you. Were you ready for some dumb and potentially wholesome questions?
Absolutely.
Do you have a good story about when you fucked up as a rookie?
Yes. So many, many of them. Kind of one of my funniest, I think, is I got out with this guy and I was like super aggressive with him. I had no reason to be. I was just, you know, I was Billy Badass Cop. And I went from having a nice, hey man, you need to go to jail because you've got a misdemeanor warrant, to him being like, fuck you, I'm gonna fight you. And as we start strapping up, you know, I call for assistance over the radio and had a shoulder mic on that was like a kind of like a bungee cord type thing. He knocks it off right as my backup's pulling up. Well, in slow motion, I see the microphone swing off my shoulder, go right in between my legs, and kind of put me down for the count whenever it
Oh
hits.
no.
And what was funny about it was the guy, like, he's starting to turn off to run, And he sees me go, oh, and fall over. And he turned around, like, oh, are you okay? And then my backup comes running up, and they just see me on the ground in pain. And I'm like, it wasn't him. It's okay. And he was like, I'm sorry. And I didn't charge him with obstruction or you know, resisting or anything, because it was really me escalating the situation. But it humbled me in more than one way.
That's one of the funniest fucking things I've ever heard. But it's also, I think it's an important lesson too, that sometimes people get like so fixated on shit that they don't like realize that they're fucked up. Or some, you know, if that, does that make any sense?
Yeah. I mean, there was no reason for me to go in that hot on that guy. And that was, I was glad it happened with him and not somebody who really could have, you know, had it out for me and really hurt me.
You're such a humble man.
No, I'm just small and I got my ass kicked a lot.
What's the proudest moment of your career?
Oh, man, there was one day that it was pretty early on in my career as well, but got a call for a missing juvenile. And this was my first time I worked an actual investigation. And my department was so small that we had one investigator. And unless it was a murder, they were not coming out. And we worked 12-hour shifts. And I got the call at 6:30 that morning. And I stayed until probably about 8 o'clock that night. And it was probably about 5 o'clock in the evening where I was interviewing her boyfriend that I finally got him to break and say, okay, she's at my grandmother's house because we're going to elope and et cetera, et cetera. And she was 14 years old. He was 16. But she was safe. We got her back to her parents. And at the end, even the suspect was like, hey man, I appreciate you just having her interest in heart.
Anything end up happening to him or no?
No. So our state is one of those where at 16, you can't really do anything other than refer it. And since her parents didn't want to press charges, they didn't do anything with it. But again, I was just happy that she was okay and she wasn't, you know, dead at the bottom of a gully somewhere. And I'm sure I've had.
Hold on a second. What's a gully?
Oh, it's kind of like a trench or like a ravine somewhere. I've also got another story where I was pretty happy about that. Also involves a missing juvenile that but I have to share it just because of my partner at the time. It's more for him than for me. That we got a call. He was actually working split shifts and I was working days, but we had been partners for a while before we switched shifts. And we show up. It's just a juvenile or a runaway juvenile locate. And we find her and we end up getting in a pretty big fight, just the two of us with it's a whole family of like five people. And again, this is one of those times where it wasn't that we went in hard or heavy or anything like that. It's just one of those times that we should have known we needed more help. And we were kind of, we got this type thing. And, in the end, we ended up having like five people arrested. But at one point his radio got stripped. My taser got taken. I almost got choked out, but we ended up getting her back. And turns out that, she had been impregnated by one of the suspects and they were trying to get her to go to another country. And they were claiming that she was this other person and stuff. And, then about 5 or 6 months later, she came by the police department and brought that baby that she'd been impregnated with. She brought the baby with her and said, thank you guys so much. I appreciate you guys rescuing me. Here's my son. I want you to meet him. And so I actually have a picture of me and my partner with her and the baby. And that was just really cool.
That's pretty cool, man. I don't want to take away from that moment, but my curiosity is fucking killing me. The last one you were telling me about, the 16 and the 14-year-old, did they get married?
As far as I know, no. But then again, being where we are, I wouldn't have been surprised if they were also cousins.
Oh, where's the banjo music? All right. Well, you guys in the South and your weird shit, but I'm not here to judge. Yeah, I'm gonna judge that. Would you want, you said you got kiddos. Would you want them to be in law enforcement?
No. And it's nothing against this job or the people in it. I have a couple kids and they are all just so different, and I feel that they could just be so much better than me and be so much. I don't want them having to worry about putting on a vest and carrying a gun everywhere and, ordering a burger and having somebody say, hold the spit. And I just want them to have better than I did and, be safer and sleep at night.
This is kind of a dark thought, but one of the things I think I hate the most about doing this, and I don't know if you can really even articulate it, but I guess you just see the world differently and you see how things actually are. And sometimes I wish I didn't. Does that make any sense?
It does. It's kind of like the rose-colored glasses thing. I mean, and it was one of those things that my wife, whenever she got into her current job, she thought saw things a certain way, and then she started kind of working with the public as well, and started seeing it differently. And what made me sad was seeing her shift from being, optimistic and positive about people to being like, what's their arterial motive or alt. You know what I'm trying to say.
Hey, I can't pronounce words. We're all friends here.
Yeah, I mean, I also couldn't spell nystagmus for the longest time, but
That's a tough one.
yeah. So it, I don't want to see my kids do that because I mean my girls are just so sweet and kind, and my boy is just so full of life, and he's just he's just a boy. He's fun. And I don't want to see them look at the world the same way I do, with the same suspicion and darkness.
That was fun, but I
Yeah,
know
so
exactly what you're saying. I miss who I was 10 years ago.
there's a song, I can't remember who it's by, that who I am hates who I used to be. And it's kind of the opposite now of who I was hates who I become.
Yeah, I
Which
mean, I'm by no means, I mean, like I have my faults for sure. I mean, I could be a better dude for sure. There's no doubt about that. But sometimes I hate the world view that I have. And I don't know, maybe it's here's a therapy session. Like I want to not think that way anymore, you know, but it's hard not to when you continue to see kind of the same stuff happening. And no matter how much you talk about it or try to say anything about it, no one's really listening, you know?
Well, I mean that's where I have to disagree with you, because I think that's where we have to be there for each other and listen to each other, whether it's in the same department or not, current officer or not. And at the same time, while I hate the way I see certain things, I wouldn't change it for anything. And the way I look at it is, how can I expect to ask somebody else to go out there and deal with the domestics and the wrecks and the fights and the shootings and the bullshit if I'm not willing to do that myself? And even in my current job, where, yeah, I deal with cops whenever they're having, or whenever we go out there normally, we always say, yeah, cops are dealing with people when they're at their worst day. Well, I'm dealing with cops whenever they have their worst day. And so all the bullshit that I've been put through at to this point has prepared me to help them at this point. And again, not trying to be like granola-y or anything like that, but I feel that everybody has a purpose, and that's what I'm here for.
Where is my fucking applause button? Here's where we're at, bud. I need to know, in your opinion, what the best patrol car is of all time.
That's where you're gonna hate me. I think the Ford Fusion Responder.
What the fuck did you just say?
I'm messing with you. No, my first car was a 98 Crown Vic, the first one with the bubble style. That was the best car I've ever had. My current job, I have a Tahoe. It is amazing for what I ask it to do. But basically, give me anything other than a V6 charger, and I'll be happy. But I would actually say the V8 Caprice was pretty nice.
Now, are you talking the like the old Caprice, like the 94, 96, or are you talking the newer ones?
Newer ones. The other ones were before my time, but that was, again, I was brought up and I had a 98 Crown Vic. Then I went to a newer style Impala, and then I got the V8 Caprice, and that was nice. It also had cruise control, so.
Yeah, I fucking hate that about my Vic, because it doesn't have cruise control. I'm such a bitch. Those new Caprices fucking scream. There's no doubt about it. I don't think they corner and handle as well as a Vic, but they fucking scream. So they're cool for that reason. Well, now the actual real reason that anybody listens to the podcast, somebody cares about anything we just talked about for the last hour and a half. Nick, have you shit your pants?
I wish I could be cool and say that I have, but I have actually not, which is, again, with the Crohn's disease, is actually a surprise. But I've been very, very close, and I am not too proud to admit that I have ran code to the local gas station before, but I have managed to not shit my pants.
Aww.
I know.
I thought for sure when you said that you pooped your pants because you had Crohn's disease, I thought we were going to get some fucking doozy. And I cannot express the level of disappointment right now.
Now, I have as a civilian, I just have not as a cop.
Oh, no, I mean, I'm talking anytime, man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the
Yeah.
shitting pants, let's clear the air here about shitting the pants. Doesn't have to be a cop story.
So right before I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, I was on an international flight. I found out that one of the juices that they serve is kind of different than what we have in the States. And as I was on the innermost seat closest to the window, I started getting the little grumbles, and I was like, oh, excuse me, I need to get up. And by the time the other two people had gotten up, I was like, might as well just sit back down.
I shouldn't make fun of you for that. I mean, I'm not making fun of you because I've shit my pants, so we're all friends here. But I feel like I'm exploiting your disease, which is probably wrong.
It's fine. I mean, I have a card that says, hey, he can go to any bathroom he wants, even if it's the woman's.
Wait, is that a real thing?
No.
Oh, it's like, fuck. I'm gonna make fun of you for that. Well, buddy, we've come to the conclusion of this very poorly made police podcast. I believe episode 38, but I can't count because I went to public school. Do you have any words of wisdom for all the millions of listeners out there you'd like to share?
No, I just want to say that I appreciate it. I appreciate all the other cops out there and what they do, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on here and ramble for a while.
Hey, man, I appreciated it. I think, it was a somewhat dark and dry. That's what she said.
Oh.
No, that was bad. Look, it's like that Larry the Cable Guy bit. Lord, I apologize. Dude, Larry the Cable Guy, I can't believe how funny I used to think that was, but I'm sure if I listen to it now, I'd probably still think it's funny because I'm like 3 years old. So
No, the funniest thing is to listen to him with his real accent.
yeah, what a fucking sellout.
Hey,
That's cool.
I cannot blame him. He made way more money than I can.
Yeah,
So.
no, it's my kid's been watching Cars a lot lately, and you got to be on. I mean, Mater's a great character. How can you not love Mater?
Okay, so we actually watched this movie. Sorry, going off on a tangent. The Mitchells versus the Machines, I think, and I. Again, I've got a little kids, and that was actually a hilarious movie. Like, I was actually laughing.
I don't know if I've heard what is the Mitchells versus the Machines? Is that the one where they're like holed up in the gas station or something.
Yes. And the reason it was so funny is because the dad is 100% my father-in-law.
I feel like my kids watched it and I walked in and I saw bits and pieces and I remember chuckling because it was so stupid that I thought it was funny, if I'm thinking of the right movie.
It probably.
And don't they like they end up like it's something about like they had to get to like a cell phone or something like that to like turn off the robots or something.
Yes, it's very tongue in cheek, it's very self-aware, and it's very meta humor.
Dude,
But
what the fuck does meta even mean?
all I know is that some people make a lot of money by patenting it. But
Well, you said it. You used it in a sentence, so you need to explain yourself because I want to know.
Basically just like from what I understand it means, which is what I always say on the stand, is it's just the hang on, Googling.
You fucking cheater. I'll
No,
allow it.
I mean, I know what Meta, as far as like technology and kind of being like
Well,
the new norm type stuff.
I know Meta is like, you know what Facebook calls itself, the parent group of, you know, Instagram and all that shit. But I didn't know, like, does Meta mean like basically like the online world? Is that kind of what it means?
No, it's basically just to where you make fun of yourself.
What?
Like, yeah, it's like self-referential.
No cap?
I don't even know what that means. I don't know what that means.
You will. You will. Well, buddy, I appreciate your time and the time to talk about your experiences and everything you've been through. I hope this podcast for guys that haven't been involved in a shooting, hopefully you never will be, but hopefully this kind of gives you an idea of what to expect and deal with. And now we know what the big bad state agencies do. So that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, we basically dick off just as much as everybody else.
Yeah, it's parking lot and chill, motherfucker.
Yes. Hey, I really appreciate it. I'm sorry that it was so dark and dry, but I
That's what
really
she
do
said.
appreciate. Oh,
Oh, there
you
it
got
was
me
again.
again.
Now, I is it weird that I contribute part of the dark and dryness that my fucking can't talk again for like the eighth time this year?
No, the only thing I am disappointed about is that I did not get to guess your BAC.
Dude, I'm I didn't make an announcement. Maybe I don't know if you saw on Facebook, but I've decided for the month of August that I'm not gonna drink. I need to I let you know what? We're at the end of the podcast here. We're being open and honest about everything. The poorly made weight loss challenge, if you're a long time listener to the podcast, was an absolute failure. I lost like, I don't know, 20 pounds and I've kind of gained it all back and I'm like officially down 3 years or 3 years, 3 pounds from when I started, and that's fucking ridiculous over a year. So I decided it's kind of time to get serious and the drinking twice a week on the podcast. And not that I'm like, I mean, so far with the BACs, I haven't gotten too high, but I'm still drinking a lot more beer than I should over a 2 hour time period. And it can't be good for my health and some other stuff. So I'm like, you know what? Just need a I need to have a good jump start to the diet. So no liquor for August. So
I'm proud of you, man. I kind
don't
of
be
got.
proud of me. I fucking did. I failed. I failed miserably. I got to do this all over
No,
again.
I'm just proud that you recognize it, though, because I mean, I don't drink during the week because I'm, on call status and stuff. But I mean, I will never make fun of somebody for not drinking. I mean, I'll make fun of you for a lot of other stuff, but I'm also not going to make fun of somebody for not eating mayonnaise.
Wait, you don't like mayonnaise?
Oh,
Because
I
it's
do.
spicy?
Oh yes, it's so. If I put mayonnaise on my white rice, I start crying. Way
Had
too hot.
to test your whiteness.
Yeah,
We're at the point of the podcast. Nobody fucking cares. I don't care. But I don't know, man. I had the thought earlier today because I'm cookie free right now, and I'm the fucking cookie monster too. So. Like, man, is this worth it? Like, do I even care? I'll eat cookies and get drunk. I love it. I was like, no, it's always tough the first couple of days, you know? I was like, no, I gotta be strong. No liquor, no cookies, no soda. I can do it. I believe in me. We'll see if I make it. I think I'm going to.
I mean, hey, you're however many days, I don't know how
Two
how
days.
meta you make the podcast, but yeah, I mean, I was gonna say you're 2 days in.
Two days. So, but when this podcast comes out, here's the best part. This podcast comes out in probably 2 weeks. So I'll have some explaining to do in the intro if I'm off the wagon. But I should be able to do it. I believe in myself. Although my parents are coming out in a couple days, and they want to go to the fucking the all you can eat buffet. What the fuck, man? Just started my diet, you assholes. It's okay. There's salad there too. It'll be fine. There's salad. There's iced tea. I don't have to drink soda. It's gonna be fine. Totally fine.
Oh, whoa, I'm sorry. You said iced tea. I'm sorry, you forgot to put the sweet in there.
Sweet tea's not that good.
Oh.
I'm telling you right now. Now, I like a good Arnold Palmer every once in a while.
Okay, fuck you
What's
and
wrong
your
with
mom.
that? What's wrong with the Arnold Palmer? Am I supposed to call it something else? You guys have some fucking special name for it?
Yeah, it's called gross.
Was it's really good. I don't know what you're talking about. What about Twisted Tea? Is that okay?
I've actually never had one.
It's okay.
Every time I
It's
hear
not.
Arnold Palmer, though, I always think of Arnie Palmer alert, Arnold Palmer alert from the other guys.
I when I think of the other guys, I always think about Dirty Mike and the boys, but
Oh God, that's why I had to get rid of my Prius.
no.
I'm kidding. I still have
Oh,
that thing.
you've what?
I'm
Get off
dude.
my podcast. Get off my
I've
podcast.
never, the only battery I have in my vehicle is to start it.
Dude, I that's a whole nother thing I could go rant on about like the electric cars and shit, but what do I know? Well, anyway, folks, thanks for coming to the podcast. I'll do my little spiel here. Do you guys want to continue to see this thing go keep going? You know what to do. Become a monthly donor and click the link at the end of the podcast here, and you can donate a couple bucks and keep the lights on down in the dungeon. The singular light costs a whole lot of money because I think it's knobbing too, probably dangerous also. That's a story for another day. And also, coins, t-shirts, merch, all kinds of good stuff. It you get a little something cool like this en route mug, and I get a little jingle in my pocket, like the boys in the South would say. And of course, take care of the fine sponsors of the podcast, because truly without them, I wouldn't be able to do this and give a voice to the unheard. That is a douchey thing to say. I'm taking that out, but it allows me to do this thing. So thanks again. You guys have fucking all been awesome forever. So I'm humbled that anybody listens. But with that said, remember, Ice-T's okay. Don't listen to this dumb fuck. And I love most of you. Bye-bye.